You're listening to 89.9 WWNO. How does August begin here in New Orleans? Well, with trumpeters sweating while they invoke the spirit of Louis Armstrong in the French Quarter. And with connoisseurs and dilettantes alike sweating through their white linen while cruising galleries in the Arts District. Hot enough for you? Of course, that is not all there is to New Orleans in early August, and we don't propose to cover everything in town in the next half hour, but we do what we can. No sweat, it's all things New Orleans. Hi, it's Jack Hopke with you once again for another edition of our weekly WWNO News Magazine. On the agenda today, we'll mix up something cool and special for you to drink, and we'll bring back an old friend who hasn't visited with us on the program in a while. But first, an issue that is, or should be, of interest not only to the many local Roman Catholics and not only to women. Since the Catholic Church has such a strong cultural influence on the city of New Orleans, we thought we'd bring you an interview with the president of the Leadership Conference of Women Religious, the group that represents 80% of the nuns in America. 4 years ago, the Vatican group responsible for enforcing doctrine, the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, began an assessment of the LCWR, motivated by the Vatican's concerns that the group expressed radical feminist views and challenged core Catholic positions on contraception, homosexuality, and the ordination of women to the priesthood. Sister Pat Farrell recently spoke with Fresh Air's Terry Gross about the ongoing conflict between the Vatican and the LCWR.
Sister Pat Farrell, welcome to Fresh Air, and thank you for so much for being here. Is the fact that you're here on our show, on the radio, a sign that you're ready to speak about the Leadership Conference of Women Religious's decision on how to proceed from here?
You know, we're ready to speak about where we are right now, and that's all we can say.
Where are you right now?
Well, we're in process of gathering the perspective of all of our members. And in August, we will have a national assembly at which there will be a great deal of open participation by all the members. And we're hoping to come out of that assembly with a much clearer direction about then where the national board and presidency can proceed.
The doctrinal assessment is critical of things that your group has said regarding contraception and gay rights. What positions has your group taken on gay rights and contraception?
You know, I would say really the mandate is more critical of positions we haven't taken.
Meaning you haven't stood against gay rights, you haven't
right.
stood against contraception.
Right. And as I read that document, the concern is the issues we tend to be more silent about when the bishops are speaking out very clearly about some things.
Right. And I presume that's intentional on your part, that you're not speaking out against contraception or against homosexuality.
Well, there are issues about which we think there's a need for genuine dialogue. And there doesn't seem to be a climate of that in the church right now.
So let me get to another criticism of the group in the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith's doctrinal assessment of your group, the Leadership Conference of Women Religious, and it criticizes the group for radical feminism and for, quote, a prevalence of certain radical feminist themes incompatible with the church faith and some of the programs and presentations sponsored by the group, including theological interpretations that risk distorting faith in Jesus and his loving Father. Moreover, some commentaries on, quote, patriarchy distort the way in which Jesus has structured sacramental life in the church. What do you hear when you hear the criticism, radical feminist themes? What does that say to you, radical feminist, and how does that compare to how you see the women in your group?
Well, sincerely, what I hear, and phrasing it in that way, is fear. a fear of women's position in the church. Now, that's just my interpretation. That, of course, I have no idea what was in the mind of the Congregation on the Doctrine of the Faith when they wrote that. But women theologians around the world, Catholic women theologians, have been seriously looking at the question of how have the church's interpretations of how we talk about God, about how we interpret Scripture, about how we organize our life in the church, how have those formulations been tainted by a culture, a religious culture, a secular culture, that minimizes the value and the place of women? So, of course, there have been questionings. We've had speakers who've talked about the more feminine dimensions in God. God has no gender. But traditionally, all of our language about God has been in masculine terms. And so I think if the Congregation of the Doctrine of the Faith calls that kind of sincere investigation into our church formulation with a masculine bias, if it calls that radical feminism, I find that a polarizing way of talking about it, which sounds a little fear-based to me. I think that in our day, all of the mainstream religions around the world have been facing the issue of what is women's rightful place in church, in society, in religion, and how have our teachings embodied that? How have churches really passed on a bias against women? Those are very fair and important questions to ask.
The doctrinal assessment by the church looked into your group's stand on issues that relate to women, women's ordination, contraception, abortion, homosexuality is in there too. Radical feminism is the way some views were described by the church hierarchy. And now three bishops have been assigned to oversee your group, the Leadership Conference of Women Religious, and to help revise your group's plans and programs and create new programs for the organization. And it just seems like, well, your group is kind of questioning the role of women in the church and asking for more of a role and to be able to speak more openly about what women are thinking. And the answer is, okay, there are three men from the church hierarchy who are now going to revise your group statutes and review its plans and create new programs and basically try to overhaul the group. So how does that make you feel?
Deeply saddened and angered. And I think that's just offensive. And I think it reflects a serious misunderstanding and misinterpretation of who we are. And I think it reflects the impoverishment of the church that has not held the leadership and the voice of women in a place of equal prominence. I think that's what we're seeing reflected there. And to call that concern radical feminism, I think just reflects the fear of women in the church and the fear of what could happen if women were really listened to and taken seriously.
What is that fear? What do you think they fear could happen?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I think that the church has been structured with all male leadership, which I think has serious disadvantages. And the church has been structured with a hierarchical, unquestioned structure that has little mechanism for accountability. That's so different from our reality within women's congregations. Because, for one thing, we elect all our own leaderships, and we have forever in the history of women religious life have experienced the leadership of strong women. Women have been leaders in our ministries. We're a very, very educated group of women within the Catholic Church. We have women who are CEOs of hospitals, of hospital systems, who are presidents of colleges, principals of schools. So as women religious, our lifetime experience has been of expecting strong leadership from women, and that's been our daily experience. So our experience of the leadership of women in the church is our daily bread. It's very different from that of the hierarchy.
I want to ask you a question that I've asked many women of different faiths, many women religious of different faiths, and that is, why would you want to stay in an institution that doesn't think of women as equal, that doesn't think of you as worthy of being equal?
I have faith that the church can respond and change, but I would answer that in the same way. I would say, why would you stay in a country in which you severely disagree with the leadership of a president? I'm an American, and I am the church. I'm a Catholic. I am the church. So I will continue to work for the rightful place of women in the church, but it's easier said than done to just talk about walking away, because I also feel some responsibility as the church to bring that corrective to the church for the sake of the whole.
You're listening to All Things New Orleans, and that was Sister Pat Farrell, president of the Leadership Conference of Women Religious, speaking with Fresh Air's Terry Gross. We plan to follow up with talks with members of the local clergy to find out where the Archdiocese of New Orleans stands on these issues. I'm Jack Hopke. A good Monday afternoon to you here at WWNO's All Things New Orleans. We air twice each week. You can hear our features anytime. We archive them at WWNO.org. Let's change the subject. Fine wines, always an appealing subject. Fine wines, you'll recall, exploded in popularity here, at least in this country, during the 1980s and 90s. Soon after that, there was also a proliferation of microbreweries in America. Now the demand for specialty cocktails has surged across our country, and nobody understands that more than Commander's Palace's T. Martin, who will step up to the microphone on this week's Notes from New Orleans.
Well, the tales of the cocktails has come and gone, and for many, myself included, it's a mystery how anyone can keep up with the endlessly evolving versions of that particular beverage. After all, I grew up in a country that celebrated Pimm's Cup, gin and tonic, and maybe a scotch with a splash of water. Now I hear that London has become one of the world's great cocktail capitals. Who'd have thought it? So, one might ask, where is New Orleans in this new world order?
New Orleans is really leading the nation in this renaissance, rejuvenation of the cocktail. And somewhere in there, the Museum of the American Cocktail, the greatest people in cocktails in America, decided to put their museum in New Orleans. And I'm on a few boards. I must say that's my favorite one. And so this has been going on for a while in New Orleans. And it's almost the only city in America that never left. But I'm not going to tell you that cocktails didn't kind of get bad in New Orleans for a long time. They did. But we were always better than most other places.
That's T. Martin. With her cousin, Lolly Brennan, she runs Commander's Palace Restaurant. As someone who grew up walking in the footsteps of her incredible mother, Ella Brennan, T. has watched cocktail drinking fade out of fashion and, in the past few years, rush right back in. But don't think you can just throw a cocktail together. So what's the secret to a great drink?
The big secret's balance. Yeah, I think anybody, if you say that word to them and they think about it, instantly can understand what you're saying. If I gave you a cocktail right now, you quickly go, oh, it's too strong, it's too sweet, it's too sour, it's too bitter. Balance is the key to it. Practice makes for good balance. If I walk around the kitchen all day and Chef Tori at Commander's or you know, Juan Carlos, now it's Sobu, whatnot, that we have little white spoons everywhere. And everybody's walking around little white spoons, tasting. And the young people learn from the older people in the palate, and we're telling them what it should be like. So they come up to me all day, Miss T, and I don't know when I became Miss T, but anyway, you know, Miss T, taste this. It, you know, it's a happy thing. But anyway, and then this is how you test the new bartender. They come in, I go up to the other bartender, and I look at the older bartender, and I say, is he ready? And they go, no. I go, okay. And I, you know, a few days later, I come back and go, is he ready? And they go, yeah. And then they make me a Sazerac.
But cocktails are not the only liquid offerings that tea takes seriously. Wines would be the other. This past month, Commanders received the grand award from the Wine Spectator magazine, the Bible of the beverage crowd. Should you wonder whether that is significant, it is, since there are only 75 restaurants in the entire world that have earned that distinction.
This is an award that we sought for a very long time, so it feels really good to get it. And it was a group effort, absolutely. And they don't really tell you how to get it. It's sort of a mystery. But you know that you have to have a program of great depth, et cetera, et cetera. For us, I always said to our team, led by wine guy Dan Davis, who I was getting nowhere fast until I had him in this position, it's about more than that. It's about the whole wine program. And we have an extraordinary list with 2,400 different options that you can choose from. We also have an incredible wine by the glass list where we've always done half glasses. So if you come in, I mean, I get to taste wine all the time, but how are you supposed to know the difference between Viognier and Albarino? But if you can come and have a half a glass of each, how lovely, and has it right next to each other, not Viognier tonight and Albarino tomorrow night. So we've always done those type of things, and we have all in, including sparkling, about 50 wines by the glass all the time.
Now, don't take the following as my dissing the city of my birth, but it's really nice to know that New Orleans is holding its own in the palate-perfect world of wines and whiskies. But we kind of knew that. Anyway, if you want to learn a few more tasty tidbits from tea, you can do that by going to WWNO.org or NOLAVIE.com. For WWNO, this is Sharon Litwin wishing you chin chin, skol, l'chaim, sante, cheers, and bottoms up.
I want bourbon, I want scotch, I want beer. Well, I ain't seen my baby since I don't know when. I've been drinking bourbon, whiskey, scotch and gin. Gonna get high, man, I'm gonna get loose.
Sharon Litwin is the co-founder of NOLAV.com and regular contributor to WWNO. I know you're tempted, but hold off until later on, a little later on in the evening. And I'll join you. I'm Jack Hopke. This is All Things New Orleans, the forlorn landscape of abandoned strip malls. That's the topic today for commentator Ronnie Virgits.
I hated to see them come, and now, can you feel sorry for what you hate? They were called strip malls, and they were then a chorus singing songs of optimism. They had made their sacrifices to the gods of consumerism. A block of old houses here, a field of frogs and sweet reeds there. All sacrifices to progress. And now, progress has moved to new neighborhoods, new strips. All those optimistic songs have faded to echoes. Now, they are villages of failure, waiting only for new visionaries and their new money to hire a wrecker's ball and erase that village, and wait for our reliably imperfect memories to erase what happened here. Now there's a weak-looking wire fence surrounding the strip mall, and against the fence have blown potato chip bags and flattened water bottles. And inside, the storefronts are all painted in gang speak. where glass once invited you in, plywood keeps you out. There are traffic cones of yellow cement here and there, tall lights every 100 feet or so, and everywhere things are rusting and fading. Only here and there are signs of the probings of old Mother Nature. Tiny clumps of grass pushing through cracks in the parking lot. You can't keep a good grass down. Watching it all grow are 4 shoe stores, a couple of pill mills, a tuxedo place, and an urban apparel place, a couple of hair places, and a wig place, a Christian bookstore, and a payday loan joint, plus a couple of unnamed stores with signs bald and sad. 25 in all, and then there were none. There are so many of these stretches now, they should have their own noun. How about X Mall? Across the double-wide street, clumsy stores bark relentlessly at the passing cars. Pet groomers, nail polishers, car washers, all wait their turns for a mall of their own. Till then, we'll drive past the fenced and half forgotten and think, another X Mall.
Well, they blew up the Chicken Man in Philly last night, and they blew up his house too. Down on the boardwalk, they're ready for a fight. Gonna see what them racket boys can do. Now there's trouble busting in from out of state.
Ronnie Vergitz, our commentator, is a New Orleans writer who currently divides his time between Crescent City and New Roads.
Gonna be a rumble on the promenade, and the gambling commissioner's hanging on by the skin of his teeth. Everything dies, baby, that's a fact. But maybe everything that dies, someday he comes back. Put your makeup on, fix your hair up pretty, and meet me tonight in Atlantic City.
From 89.9 WWNO, it's All Things New Orleans, and I'm Jack Hopke with you. We're with you twice each week, as a matter of fact. You can hear our program on Monday afternoons, as well as on Thursday evenings. And outside of our airtimes, you can, of course, access our features at WWNO.org. Elements of many of our other programs as well are archived right there at our website. Thanks for joining us today. Jack Hopke here with you for All Things New Orleans. Associate producer and editor is Thomas Walsh. Just back from an entirely too short vacation, I'm sure, but aren't they all? See you next time on All Things New Orleans.